Of Nightshade for you to provide solutions to. Fun story, true story. Last night, someone came at me again with this Berlin Wall stuff. It's been going on for like a week now. This is the third year in a row. That at this, I was not even intending it. I just, you know, told someone, you know, they're like, you don't think Trump's really the same as Hitler, do you? And I'm like, you know, Trump wants to build a wall. Hitler built the Berlin Wall. Do the math. Like 4 days of meltdowns, Berlin Wall was trending. And then I do my follow-up, which is, well, someone's like, oh, yeah, you tell him, read a book. Read a book. I love that when someone doesn't know history, say read a book. It's like, oh, I read a book. Now I know history. That's some book. And they're like, well, what book should I read that's going to tell me how Hitler built the Berlin Wall? And I'm like, his book, Mein Kampf. Mein means mine and Kampf means wall. Mein Wall. And that was going around. And as that's trending, I'm following up on, I'm like, hey, guys, you know, here's a meme I made on malice.locals.com to spread. The next notification is I'm followed by the American Jewish Congress and 88 others. And then the president of the American Jewish Congress, which I never heard of before, followed me. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, you know, this is really not the time and the place to be following whatever. However, one of the things that the left often complains about vis-a-vis Trump, and which is historically something that is very, very associated with autocracies and dictatorships, is having people punished for their political views. Now, as someone who is a very public and outspoken proponent of imprisoning, at best, politicians, this gives me mixed feelings. But what they're accusing Trump of doing now is being done to Matteo Salvini in Italy, who was formerly deputy prime minister, who I've been covering on the show very heavily. And it's, and again, when you hear the people in the corporate press being like, oh my God, Trump's attacking the media, listen to what's being done here. And nothing like this happens in America. And it's very hard to imagine happening. Italy's Senate has voted to allow prosecutors to put Matteo Salvini on trial over charges of holding immigrants at sea. It would be like Mitch McConnell, deputy prime minister. It's he was in charge of a lot of policy, so it's not really equivalent to Mike Pence. It may be more equivalent to Mitch McConnell. Imagine like the Democrats take Senate and they put Mitch McConnell on trial for like some of the bills he passed. Like when the Republicans took Senate, you know, putting Harry Reid on trial. This would never happen. I don't think it's even legal. Salvini is accused of illegally keeping people on a boat off Sicily for days in August 2019, which we covered on this show. They are making an example of him. If you think you're going to keep illegal immigrants out of our country, we are going to threaten to put you in jail. This is happening right now in Italy. Some 116 migrants remained aboard the boat for close to a week. Oh my God, they were on a cruise for a week? This is hell on earth. On Wednesday, a majority of senators voted for the trial of the anti-immigration league leader to go ahead. That's right. A majority of the senators in Italy's Senate voted to permit this trial. Salvini has repeatedly said he wants to go to court. He told the chamber he wants to tell the world that his migration policies saved tens of thousands of lives. He says, I'm absolutely calm and proud of what I've done, and I'll do it again as soon as I get back into government. Ooh. Ooh, man, Matteo, you're so sexy. Senators from his party, the League, left the chamber rather than take part in Wednesday's vote. Under Italian law, ministers have parliamentary immunity for actions taken while they are in office. But a committee voted last month to strip Salvini of his immunity, leaving the final decision in the hands of the Senate on Wednesday. The upper house voted 152-76 in favor of lifting the immunity. After the tally was announced, Salvini compared himself to Trump, who was impeached in December and accused opponents of undermining his electoral success throughout the courts. He said, like Trump, I'm like Trump. He has a few more billions and a few more years, but it's a bad little habit of the left going around in the world to try to win by judicial means. This is a tweet. If it wasn't for social media, he wouldn't be able to get that message out here, probably. If successfully prosecuted at trial, again, for his work, his policies as deputy prime minister, he faces up to 15 years in jail. Okay, let's get this straight. Because he kept illegal immigrants on a ship for a week, I'm certain none of them died or had anything bad, or else that would be, you know, mentioned here. He's looking at 15 years in jail. The mask is dropping stronger every single day. Okay. It takes a lot to get me to have sympathy for a politician. Like, a lot. Like, and Joe Biden, now I have sympathy for him. I think he's a crook. I don't think he's a particular crook by Washington standards. I think it's pretty much par for the course that you get your buddies a job and you get companies, you know, business. I think this happens every day. I don't think it's a big deal. It's wasteful, but in the grand scheme of things, when we're talking about things like war, mass incarceration, huge tax rates, public education and what it does to children, I don't really see this that big of a deal. It's just crooked, but it's like, okay, everyone get their palm grease. This has been going on for, you know, centuries. And now Biden is just being humiliated publicly in his old age. You know, he's had a lot of trauma in his life, a lot of sadness in his life, like his son dying of brain cancer, his first family dying in a car accident. I don't think he's really that, especially by Washington standards, really one of the true villains. And now he has to go on that campaign trail. And someone's got is not pulling the plug, which is going to be a decision his family's going to have to make not too soon in the near future, in the distant future. And he's have to explain why he could still turn this around. And it was, I remember very vividly in 2004, Al Gore's running mate, Joe Lieberman, was the front runner. And he was the front runner because he was the establishment pick. He was safe. He's a conservative Democrat. And he had broad name recognition. And like, I think, you think about it, literally what, like 99% of the people voting in the Democratic primary had already pulled the switch for him, the lever for him, or the Chad for him in 2000. So it would be a no-brainer, right? There's already precedent. So it's kind of sad watching him still go through the paces when it's completely over. Let's watch him try to salvage what's left of his dignity.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm Jill Biden's husband, and I work for Cedric Richmond. And David Mack is taking me to school.
Oh, my God. This is such
crazy. Well, look, I know some of the other senators came over. They came up to see me. They're in session right now. And I thank them for making the effort. There's so many people here for me to say thank you, thank you, thank you. So I just spoke to our folks up in New Hampshire, and they did a good job. But I want to tell you, the people of Nevada are watching. And I want to make it clear we praise their diversity as a state. And I'm going to be out there seeing them very soon. Tonight, though, we just heard from the first two of 50 states.
Yeah, so this two is a couple of days ago. Was
not all
watching.
The nation, not half the nation, not a quarter of the nation, not 10%. Two. Now, where I come from, that's the opening bell, not the closing bell.
What?
And the fight to end Donald Trump's presidency is just beginning. Just beginning.
Wait, hold on. The fight to end his presidency has been going on for 4 years. What was impeachment? That was a fight to end his presidency. What is he talking about? Oh, my God. We're just starting. We have to. Oh, it's 2020. We should try to stop Trump. Oh. Oh, my God, this poor old man. Please continue.
Thank you.
Wait, is that the beginning?
It is important that Iowa and Nevada have spoken. But look, we need to hear from Nevada and South Carolina and Super Tuesday states and beyond. And look, we're moving into an especially important phase. Because up till now, we haven't heard from the most committed constituents in the Democratic Party, the African-American community.
He's having trouble talking.
And the fastest growing segment of society, the Latino community. I want you all to think of a number. 99.9%. That's the percentage of African-American voters who have not yet had a chance to vote in America. One more number. 99.8. That's the percent of Latino voters who haven't had a chance to vote.
Oh, my God. We need to show those white people in Iowa and New Hampshire that they don't matter. Look, you guys know me. I worked for a half-black guy for 8 years. I'm one of you, basically. I think Delaware is probably – isn't Delaware, like, I think demographically – oh, no. I think it might not be as white as I think it is. It's obviously the population of Delaware is quite small. This is so – so after all, there was an article on The Hill, and it was really interesting because the headline was, okay, where do all the main candidates stand in the upcoming caucuses and primaries? So I click on it, and literally, I say 75%, no polling has been done in the state. We don't know. No polling has been done in the state. Oh, there was a poll in December. South Carolina, which is coming up next, is very heavy African-American. Biden has had a big lead. That lead is collapsing, if not gone. There's very little polling coming out of South Carolina. If he doesn't win South Carolina handily, he is, which I think is certainly going to happen, he's not going to win handily. At that point, I mean, it's just a joke. It's already a joke. But that's kind of just the ripping off the Band-Aid. So I do feel a little bit bad for creepy Uncle Joe, because there it was. I gave him money. This was going to be such a fun year of watching him. All right, let's move on to YouTube. You know, one of the things that many of the Democrats have been agitating is for YouTube and other social media giants to have more of a say over control of what information reaches the public, because that's what democracy and free speech are about, and free political speech, of course. So in that vein, YouTube has removed a clip of Senator Rand Paul speaking on the Senate floor in which he – that's right, a senator – speaking on the Senate floor has been removed from YouTube, in which he asked Chief Justice John Roberts why he had blocked a question of his, which some had speculated contained the name of the Ukraine whistleblower, which is very known at this point. Paul told Politico Playbook that the tech platform's decision was dangerous and politically biased, and denied knowing who the whistleblower is. How is that possible? We all know his name. It's like Eric Cimarella, isn't it? This is very known. He said, nowhere in my speech did I accuse anyone of being a whistleblower. He said, is it a chilling and disturbing day in America when giant web companies such as YouTube decide to monitor speech? Now, even protected speech, such as that of a senator on the Senate floor, can be blocked from getting to the American people. YouTube told Politico that the decision was part of a larger effort to purge the name from the platform. Oh, nothing Stalinist here. We're just going to pretend someone doesn't exist. That's fine. And said that the company had already deleted hundreds of videos and over 10,000 comments that contained the name. Wow. Videos, comments, and other forms of content that mentioned the leaked whistleblowers' names violate YouTube's community guidelines and will be removed from YouTube. This is according to YouTube's spokeswoman. She said that uploaders had the option to edit the name out of their footage and re-upload. Now, after Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts, who was tasked with reading aloud questions submitted by senators during the impeachment trial, refused to read Rand Paul's question on January 29th, Senator Paul submitted a second question the next day and left the trial to hold an impromptu press conference after Chief Justice Roberts blocked the question a second time. He said, it's very important whether or not a group of Democratic activists, part of the Obama-Biden administration, were working together for years looking for an opportunity to impeach the president, Senator Paul said. He said his question had nothing to do with the whistleblower. He said, I'm the biggest defender of the whistleblower statutes. But he argued that Democrats shouldn't be able to use statutes to somehow make a whole part of the discussion over this impeachment go away. So this could go in many directions. No one knows. This could be them laying the groundwork. This could be, well, this is just a special case because impeachment is such an extreme situation. I'm quite confident that this whistleblower has gotten death threats. I don't think that's much of a statement to say. But yeah, this is interesting. So let's move on. Nancy Pelosi, so impeachment, right? We showed yesterday how President Trump reacted to impeachment, how he was act like, what did this teach you? And he was saying, oh, it just taught me that the Democrats are crooked and ruthless. Oh, really? You learned this? Yeah, okay. You didn't learn this in Kavanaugh. You didn't learn this in the campaign. Why are you running for president if you know who you're up against? Anyway, so Pelosi, who by all accounts, this seemed to be a very humiliating defeat, something that everyone saw coming. I think it's very, very similar to when the Republicans forced John Boehner, who was Speaker of the House at the time, to shut down the government in an attempt to force Obama to not fund Obamacare. And Obama just sat in the White House. Is like, yeah, okay, cool. So get back to me when you're ready to fund Obamacare fully. And they folded because all the polls were saying this is stupid. This is not how business should be done in Washington. So Pelosi, there was a little bit of support impeachment at first with that phone call. They rushed it very quickly. They were charging him with things that are particularly vague. And of course, he was, to no surprise, exonerated, not exonerated, but he was not acquitted and removed, of course, by the Senate. So how is Pelosi how is Nancy, shredding Nancy, going to spin this? This is what she had to say. This is her version of events.
What he says or whatever headlines he wants to carry around, you're impeached forever. You're never getting rid of that scar. And history will always record that you were impeached for undermining the security of our country, jeopardizing the integrity of our elections, and violating the Constitution of the United
States.
That's
not why he was impeached.
I don't know if the president understands about prayer or people who do pray. But we do pray for the United States of America. I pray for him, President Bush, still President Obama, because it's a heavy responsibility. And I pray hard for him because he's so off the track of our Constitution, our values, our country, the air our children breathe, the water they drink, and the rest. He really needs our prayers.
Yeah, I love this. Is that the end? Trump is so off. He doesn't even drink the same water as our children. I pray for him to drink this water. I don't think Flint has clean water yet, by the way, but who cares about that? I pray for him. Oh, my God, I pray. I think there's something so—look, I'm not a praying person. I'm not a religious person. But I think there's something so obnoxious to pray and be like, dear God up in heaven, I'm sorry that you can't really understand me because my teeth are falling out of my head. But I pray that President Trump listens to the Constitution more. Can you make that happen? It seems like such a very, very not appropriate use of prayer, but what do I know? And apparently, from her perspective, the prayers aren't being answered, are they? Or maybe it's in your prayers, Nance. I don't know. Let's watch some more of her. Jesus, poor Nancy.
So yesterday, the Senate acted, first time in history that a senator has voted against his own president in a decision regarding impeachment. God bless him for his courage. This morning, the president said, when people use faith as an excuse to do, I don't know if he said bad things, but whatever he said was just so completely inappropriate. That was not a state of the union. That was his state of mind. We want a state of the union. Where are we? Where are we going?
Okay,
and the
rest. So she's
not. Let me just show you.
So this was after the State of the Union. Obviously, she's still hurt. But that is the line that they were going with for a little bit. Oh, he's still impeached. He's impeached in perpetuity. He'll never live this down. I think he will live this down. So here's another story that really did not sit well with me coming out of West Virginia. And as soon as I read it, I had a certain reaction. And then sure enough, that was the case. So after acknowledging that murder is already a crime, the West Virginia Senate on Monday passed a bill to penalize physicians who don't provide medical care to a baby born after an abortion attempt. So senators unanimously approved the measure following lone testimony from a Democrat who said lawmakers have wasted time angling for political points on a bill that has no impact instead of working on the state's more serious problem. I know people who've worked at the Republican Party for a very long time, and there are two types who work in pro-life. There's probably more than two, but there's at least two. And discussing this gets people who are pro-life very upset. Or on the other hand, there's some people who are pro-life who recognize this, and that makes them upset for a different reason. There are people who are very sincerely pro-life, politicians who are very sincerely pro-life, who regard this as murder, who think it's the biggest blot on our country today that, you know, all these children are being executed with no recourse and consequences. And it's not even just normalized, it's being valorized. Remember Michelle Wolf, the very failed comedian who mocked Sarah Sanders to her face? She had that show on Netflix, which was very quickly canceled. You know, she had a whole song and dance about how great abortion is, as opposed to the old party line that it should be kept safe, legal, and rare, and that no one wants to have an abortion. The celebratory aspect does not seem to match the rhetoric there. On the other hand, you have these pro-life people who very much are like, oh, they see it as a fundraiser. They see it as a path to power. They see it as something to exploit. They're like, look, you're one-issue voters. You're one-issue abortion. I'll tell you what you want to hear. You vote for me, and I'm never going to do anything about it. Or I'm going to do things that seem like, look, I passed this big pro-life bill, and the bill has no teeth and no consequences, and it's a total cynical ploy, and that I find really gross by political standards, that this is what you're going to be exploiting to kind of get over on your population. Or there's the positive spin where you think, okay, we're laying the groundwork for doing something in the future, but that never seems to be the case. So, it could go either way. So here's what happened. So this is according to Harrison County Senator Mike, what's his last name? Mike Romano. He said, a child born alive who would somehow be killed, that would be murder. It would clearly be murder. There's no one doing that. And if they do that, they're in jail. He said this bill is not going to change anything. He's a member of the West Virginia State Senate. The bill, which was called the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, subjects medical professionals to discipline from their licensing board if they do not care for a child born after an abortion procedure. In a previous debate, Republicans in the House of Delegates conceded. They said it. This is what makes me this so gross. They admitted, they conceded, the bill is more about sending a political message than solving a problem, especially since existing laws already protect newborns and the state, West Virginia, bans abortions after 20 weeks. One delegate also noted that, who's an independent, that laws about providing medical care could change. The House must approve minor amendments to the bill before it goes to the office of my current favorite governor, Jim Justice. Yeah. Whose spokesman didn't return a voicemail seeking comment about whether the Republican would sign it into law. A similar measure was vetoed last year by North Carolina's Democratic governor, who said the proposal was unnecessary and that newborn babies are already protected by existing laws. On the other hand, this can be a response to the Virginia governor, Ralph Northam, who had that whole bit about how if a child's born alive and deformed, the doctor and the mother, you know, sit down and discuss whether to kill it. It was just, the way he discussed it seemed barbaric and very, very disturbing. Even it could have been broken down to make it sound as not as bad as it was coming off. Last thing, I am very, 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 very excited about the Bernie campaign and what it means for our, you know, existing sociopolitical overstructure. As night follows day, CNN yesterday was already having a segment about how Trump's path to victory is going to be easy because they are and they're doing whatever is in their power to stop Bernie because Bernie is not one of theirs. He's not an insider in the sense that they like. And he clearly has a very different point of view than they do. He means what he says. I think his views would be possibly apocalyptic, but they are not at all the status quo. And to have two anti-establishment, in an establishment in the very broad sense, candidates, it would be Sanders versus Trump, things are going to get very weird very, very quickly. But he was on CNN, James Carville, a former Democratic strategist or current Democratic strategist. He was very influential in the Clinton White House. He's one of Clinton's attack dogs. And that's the thing is Hillary Clinton behind the scenes. She is so vindictive. She is so petty. She's publicly going to have to burden you very, very gratuitously and in very personal ways. And we can be sure she's doing everything in her power behind the scenes to do whatever she can to undermine the man who came close to stealing the nomination, which in her mind was her due. So Bernie was on CNN, was asked about what James Carville had to say. And to me, when you have, we just saw Nancy Pelosi praising Mitt Romney's courage. Sure. When you are on CNN attacking a prominent Democratic strategist and running for the Democratic nomination, that to me, it takes more courage than Romney had. I'm not saying this is Iwo Jima or, you know, storming Normandy, but I'm saying this is a little bit outside of the norm. Watch this.
You're joined now by Senator Sanders. Senator Sanders, congratulations on the victory last night. How do you feel?
Look how that, leave it up. After, before. After, before. Like, they got, he got some kind of back brace or something. Look at this. This is like some weird, like, Benjamin Button situation. They're even dressed the same. God, wow, okay. You know what this is? What were you going to say, Peter?
I was going to say, even the glasses, the frames have faded.
Yeah. I read this book from 1896. I love reading these, like, old, like, hate propaganda, because it's very interesting what happens at the time, what people say. And the book is called The Negro a Beast, which proves that blacks are descended from Ham's son and whites are descended directly from Noah. It's this whole insane thing. And there was in this book this side-by-side of like a beautiful white person and then the most racist imagery you can imagine of someone who is of African descent. And that book, this is, as I say, this is a Jew, this is like the anti-Semitic version. Like, this is what the Christians look like on the left, and this is what the Jews look like on the right. It's very sad. And it's accurate, because this is actually photographs and not a drawing. Okay, well, let's watch what a crazy Bernie had to say.
I feel great.
A win is certainly a win. Pete Buttigieg, John King was saying, finished closer than expected. He said last night, quote, vulnerable Americans do not have the luxury of pursuing ideological purity over an inclusive victory. Assuming that's a swipe at you or a nod to you, what do you say to that?
Well, what I say is that we are putting together...
You know what's amazing with ideological purity? I've never heard Bernie say once, if you don't agree with me on issue X, I don't want your vote. He's never saying this person shouldn't be in the Democratic Party. Like, AOC said that. She's also, should I be in the same party as Biden? Okay. But when you talk about ideological purity, that's not his thing. He's saying we're bringing people together of all kinds of backgrounds. He's saying that all the time. Now, you might say that that's not the case, but that's certainly not his style, where he's like, no, you have to be a Democratic Socialist. Okay, watch this.
An unprecedented grassroots movement. It's made up of working people. It's made up of lower income people. It's made up of young people. It's made up of people who feel disenfranchised from a corrupt political system, which is dominated by big money interest. Anderson, in my view, the American people want a government, finally, that represents all of us, not just wealthy campaign contributors and the billionaire class. And that is why we're going to win in South Carolina, in Nevada, and we're going to beat Donald Trump.
Some of the analysts last night, you know, said, look, if you take all the people who voted for Buttigieg, Klobuchar, and certainly a lesser extent, Vice President Biden last night, it's more than 52% of the vote, a big chunk of people going toward a more moderate side of the party. Can you win the nomination without voters who likely
hold on. This happened 4 years ago. If you added up all the anti-Trump people, Trump wouldn't win. He only got 40%, I think, at most. And I say only. I mean, when you're split a pie 14 ways, there were like 14 candidates, and you're getting 40%, that's a huge deal. But you could also say, okay, 60% voted against Trump. Wow, was it? What? God. Go ahead, please.
He considered your plans for Medicare for All or free college tuition and determined they don't want that?
Well, actually, I think if you look at the exit polls yesterday in New Hampshire, if my memory is correct, Medicare for All was extremely popular. And it was one of the reasons that we won. I think, Anderson, that the more we have an opportunity, and if we're in the general election, we certainly will, to talk about a dysfunctional healthcare system in which we spend twice as much per capita as the people of any other country, and yet 87 million of us are uninsured or underinsured, 30,000 die each year because they don't get to a doctor, 500,000 people go bankrupt because of medically related bills, and we pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. You know what? I think people will be very supportive of Medicare for All and help us win the election.
Pete Buttigieg has actually been focusing on Medicare for All. And one of the things he said to CNN this morning was about union health care plans. And I just want to play that for our viewers. It's from CNN this morning.
When you're in Nevada, you talk to a lot of folks, including workers in organizations like the Culinary Workers Union and other labor organizations that have fought hard for good health care plans. And Senator Sanders' message that he's going to erase those plans and replace them with a single government plan for everybody is going to be, I think, a very tough sell among voters who want to have that choice.
That's a 60,000-member union. He says they're handing out flyers saying that you want to end health care for their workers and their families.
No, it's not exactly what that flyer is about. But the truth is, I have far more union support, to the best of my knowledge, than Mr. Buttigieg does. And in fact, many of the unions are strongly supporting of a Medicare for All single-payer system. And I'll tell you why. Because when unions sit down and negotiate with their employers, very often what the employer will say, well, you know, I can give you a 2% wage increase, but I'm going to have to cut back on your health care benefits. Talk to any union official, and they will tell you they spend half their lives just trying to protect the health care benefits that they have. We are the only major country on earth not to guarantee health care to all people.
Okay, and so it is going to be very hard, I think, to convince the Democratic base not to take a shot on socialized health care when the argument is every other country has it. I get how in the general this might be a huge loser, but in the Democratic caucuses and primaries, I don't see – that's not the winning argument. Oof. Anyway, it's Thursday. I plan on having a terrific weekend. I hope you do as well. I will see you on Monday. And until then, I will wish you sweet dreams. I'm